Well, so I guess you can still get a ticket. So there's that. But the Olympics are supposed to bring people together, united in the spirit of competition. And that is not what went down during the 1924 Olympic rugby final between France and the U.S., which is partly why rugby has been kept out of the Olympics right up until this year in Rio. Karen Given from NPR's Only a Game has this reminder.
The United States is the defending Olympic rugby champion. Let that sink in for a bit. Right after the turn of the 20th century, rugby was briefly more popular than American football, at least in the state of California.
Stanford and California abandoned American football after, I think it was 1906, because during the previous season there had been 19 casualties in football.
That's an actor reading from Norman Cleveland's oral history. Cleveland was a Stanford man who played on the 1924 U.S. Olympic rugby team.
The game had gotten so rough, and there was not adequate protection.
But after World War I, American college athletes would play American football, dangers be damned. And by 1924, when the Olympics would be held in Paris, finding good American rugby players was difficult. Even so,
France, whom the United States defeated for the title in 1920, was very insistent that the title holder enter a team so that she might be given the opportunity to remove the laurel wreath from the crown of her dear brothers from the USA.
And that's another actor reading from the journal of Dudley DeGroot. DeGroot died in 1970, but his account of his time with the Olympic rugby team was printed by the Call newspaper over 23 days starting in July 1924.
And the United States, priding herself upon being the greatest sporting nation in the world, soon arrived at the conclusion that it was imperative that the French be given their opportunity.
They were looking for a punching bag. We were told to go to Paris and take our beatings like gentlemen.
Keep that word beatings in mind. Only two countries agreed to face France in the Olympic rugby tournament, the United States and Romania. Everyone else stayed home, not because they were afraid of the French team. They were afraid of the French fans. And the Americans got their first look at both after arriving in Paris and watching from the stands as France demolished Romania 61-8.
Never had we seen such beautiful passing, such clever swerving, and so much speed on one team before. We left the field fully realizing just what we were up against. A decidedly sober bunch of Americans trying to figure out just how we were going to stop that French backfield.
That France would beat Romania was a surprise to no one. It had been scheduled so that the U.S. and France would likely both have one win over Romania before they met for the final game. As it turned out, that game would be played for the gold. So it was no surprise that when the U.S. played Romania, the French fans booed and hissed at the Americans through the entire game.
To say that the French spectators were unsportsmanlike at that game would be putting it far too mildly.
The French Olympic Committee agreed. In the days before the final, they published an appeal in a local newspaper for civility in the wake of the violent sentiments shown by the French fans.
It is hard to conceive of a nation so unsportsmanlike that such an appeal is necessary. But it's harder still to try to understand how the people of the French nation could be so hostile to representatives of a country which had so recently saved them from almost certain destruction.
Rugby and rugby fans would take the blame for the events that followed, but there was a subtext here. Not only did Americans like DeGroot feel that the French owe the U.S. a debt of gratitude, but there was a feeling among the French that the U.S. and Great Britain had abandoned France, at least financially, after World War I. All of that was in play when, on a blisteringly hot and humid Sunday in May, 40,000 fans packed Columbus Stadium in Paris.
The odds were 5-1 against us. We really had our dander up. A lot of things we knew about playing American football the French were yet to learn.
They did most of their tackling around the neck and shoulders. Consequently, when we left our feet and hit them low, it simply laid them out.
We thought that some were dead. And we thought that it was only a matter of time before we would be dead also. But anyway, we won, 17-3.
The headline in the San Francisco Examiner the next day read, "French boo U.S. anthem." But in France, a different narrative altogether started to emerge.
The French newspapers switched sides. changed their role 180 degrees and we became great heroes. And Paris, I can assure you, is one of the best places in the world to be a hero.
Norman Cleveland stayed behind for a while to enjoy being a hero in Europe. Dudley DeGroot got to work on his 21-part journal for The Call. He ended not on a note of reconciliation, but on one that questioned whether the Olympics should be held at all.
Where will it end? Certainly the French need to be taught true sportsmanship, which is one of the objects of the Olympic Games. But such a thing seems to be an impossibility.
After Paris, rugby was dropped from the Olympic program due to the bad behavior of the French fans and lack of participation from other countries. Rugby sevens, the game that's being played in Rio, is faster paced and higher scoring than the game of 15s that De Groot and Cleveland played. And rugby's popularity is on a worldwide upswing. Neither France nor the U.S. is expected to medal at these games. But wouldn't it be cool if the U.S. team entered the first Olympic rugby tournament since 1924 as an underdog and came out champions? Nah, that would never happen. For Here and Now, I'm Karen Given.